Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Fitz Nation. Happy to have you with us. My guest today is UFC featherweight Andre Feely, and I think you're really going to like hearing him tell his story because it's an interesting one. Before we get to the interview, I'm changing up the format a bit for those of you that have listened to the show regularly. This is going to be part one of the interview. I'll release part two of my interview with Andre next Wednesday. I want to stay consistent with coming out with something fresh for you guys each week, new content, but maybe put it in smaller chunks, like a half hour, give or take. If you do want to listen to the full interview all at once with Andre, it's a little bit more than 50 minutes. That'll be up on the YouTube channel. I figure tougher to split the video into two, but I know plenty of you just like to listen, and so all of the interview will be here, but I'm going to split it up into chunks. This is going to stretch out the content I'm able to produce, keep it consistent, and I'm just looking ahead for me on the horizon. Pretty busy summer, contender series coming up late August into the fall. So new episodes will still come out each week, but they'll be part one, part two format, and we'll see if this makes sense. You know, I'm just going to give it a try for the next month, 2 months, and see if in the audio version this might make sense. All right, I don't want to waste any more time, though, off the top. This dude is a good one. Always enjoy talking with him on Fight Week or in this arena because of how genuine a person he is. And he's very candid with his story, and I'm happy for the career that he's had to this point and hoping that we do get to see him back inside the octagon very soon. So let's not waste any more time. As I said, here is Andre Touchy Feely on Fitz Nation.
You're looking great.
Trying. Doing my
best.
As
always.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
How you feeling?
Good. Good. I feel good. Back to training. I got two in this morning. Might get one in tonight. I'm not rushing it. Not like going crazy. But I'm staying active and I'm staying busy and always getting better, always staying sharp. I actually ran practice today and obviously joined in too, but I kind of coach practice. So yeah, I feel good. I'm back to it. You know, yeah. At this point in my career, I'm never that far away from training or the gym. It's a lifestyle. There's not really fight camp. It's just a lifestyle of being a martial artist. And so I'm never too far away from it. You know,
yeah.
I took a week and like still trained, but enjoyed and threw a party. I still got decorations up and shit, threw a party at the house and for my birthday and just kind of celebrating. And, but I'm back to it, man. I'm not banged up. I feel good.
Yeah. What is it? You look phenomenal, right? You know it. Everybody else knows it. What has been the aftermath though, because of that result for you mentally?
Mentally, I'm right back where I was in camp. Like I'm right back, you know, like I was the week before the fight. I'm locked in. I'm ready to go. I want to take over the world. I'm going to take over the world, man. I'm going to be a world champion. So back to the grind. But it's frustrating as far, like to me, it doesn't mean anything. I shouldn't say it doesn't mean anything, but to me, it doesn't change anything. Like I'm right back to doing what I do. You know, pursuing greatness, trying to be the best fighter in the world. That's the goal. It doesn't matter the outcome on any given Saturday night. That doesn't really change the goal. The frustrating thing that is affected is kind of the interactions with people after the fight. You know, like a big reason you fight is to give your people that feeling of like, we did it. Like we, you know, like I take that serious. There's a responsibility that comes with fighting. Like it's your job to manifest and capitalize on that hard work for yourself, but also for the people around you. You know, you don't know whether it's your family or your friends or people you've never met. You know, if someone's a fan of you and they're invested in your fight, there's a payoff, a win, you know, like we all win together. There's a synergy that you share. You can feel it in the arena. You can feel it when you get home and get to hug your friends and family and talk to your mom on the phone. There's a feeling that comes with winning. Like we all won. And I didn't get to bring that home to my people, man. And that shit hurts. You know, people are proud of me. You know, I keep hearing about how, oh, you look good. You look good. My dog's over there. You look good. You look the best you ever looked. You had this performance or whatever, man. Everyone knows you were going to win. It's like, you know, I appreciate that, but we didn't win. The win didn't go on the record. You know, I beat someone's ass, but I didn't win. You know, I didn't get the money that I would have gotten to win. I didn't get that feeling that we, you know, that I have worked so hard for, but also that my team and my coaches have worked hard for and invested in me and my friends and family who have put up with me for fucking 31 years now. Like we didn't get that. We didn't get that feeling of like, yeah, we did it, you know? And so that hurts and it's more motivation. It makes me more hungry.
Did I just piss you off by saying you look great?
And no, not at all. Not at all. I appreciate it. No, I appreciate it. I think, you know,
my wife today was like, who are you having on the show again? I was like, Andre Fili. I was like, he fought a few weeks ago. He looked the best he's ever looked. He was, you know, piece of the guy up. Yeah. You know, I said all of the things that you just described that you're hearing over and over because you deserve the compliments. But I can imagine on your side, it's like, well, good. You know, it's like getting a silver medal at the Olympics. It's like, you know what I mean? It's, 100%. No, that's not what I'm here for. You know,
it's not what we put all the work in for. Right. And and that's the thing is, as much as I do appreciate the compliments. I don't, that's the other thing too, is in fighting, like there's no one else to blame. Like, so I'm not mad at you for saying I look great. I appreciate that. I appreciate everybody saying it to me. You know, I have no negative feeling about someone telling me that my performance was great. That's the thing about fighting is when you win, it's for you, but it's really also for everyone else. Like the way I take it, I'm carrying a lot on my back. Like I'm trying to make my people proud. I'm trying to set an example for my younger siblings. I'm trying to chase greatness. I'm trying to do big things. When you win, it's like, we all just won. Like everybody gets, let's share in this moment. When you lose, like, you know, it hurts other people, but you know, I'm the one that has to carry that. And again, this isn't people putting this on. That's just how I feel.
Yeah.
That's how it feels to me. When you lose, you're like, yo, no one else let everybody down. You let everybody down, you know? And so when any negative feelings I have is on me, you know, it's on me for my dumb ass is the one who framed on his face and my finger slipped and poked him in the eye. No one else did that, you know? So that's really the frustrating thing. It's like, you can't be mad at anyone. There's, you know, in other sports, I never played other sports, but you know, like I think it's safe to say in other sports, sometimes things happen and if you're the quarterback, you can blame the wide receiver. You know, you put the ball where it needs to be and he doesn't catch it. Well, you did your job.
Yeah.
In fighting, it's you. It's just you. You know, no one else poked that dude in the eye on it. It was an accident.
Right. But,
you know, it's hard. It's the worst kind of being annoyed or being angry is when it's at yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah. Well, I'm exclusively like a team sports guy growing up. Like my high school didn't have a wrestling team and, you know, I was hockey, I was football. And it's true. You can craft a lot of narratives based on what happens, you know, and it's easy to do that. All right. Yeah. You mentioned your family and friends that you've been putting up with, or that have been putting up with you for 31 years.
Yeah, and vice versa. And that's fair too. I've been putting up with their ass too.
And you mentioned also, you're trying to set a good example for your siblings, right?
Yeah.
So I want to go early to the early part of Andre Fili, if we could. Is that all right?
Yeah.
You're pretty open about your story. Like how do 100%. You do, but I don't think it's as out there as maybe I know that you have an interesting backstory and I feel like it would have a lot more attention on it because of where you came from and what you've turned into.
Yeah.
So like, how would you describe your early life?
Pretty hectic chaos for sure. Right. You know, but I'll preface with this. I do feel like my story has been told a few times and I'm open about it. I'm a pretty open book, you know, like I just think being authentic and is important. But I don't want it to seem like, cause sometimes I've told the story and people focus on the other stuff, you know, dad in prison or getting in fights or being around drugs and all this shit. But, you know, I did have people before I go into it, I did have people who loved me. Like I had a mom who worked three jobs to keep food on the table. You know, I there's people, especially as you get older, you see like there's people who had it way worse than me. You know, there's people who, you know, I had one parent, some people had none, right? Like I my dad wasn't around, but at least he wasn't around like being abusive. Some people had dads who were abusive. You know, it's like your situation as bad as it ever got. The older you get, the more you realize like your situation as bad as it ever got. Like that's someone's good day. You know, people prayed to be where you were at, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just want to preface with that because it's easy to focus on the crazy stuff, but there was a lot of crazy stuff. You know, I grew up a single mom. Like she sacrificed a lot. She was young, you know, made a lot of mistakes cause she's young. I think it's almost impossible to be a good parent as a teenager. Like, you know, it's almost impossible to be a good parent when you're broke, like at any age.
Yeah. So she was a teenager when she had you.
She was a teenager. My mom had me at 19. My dad was 18. You know, they're kids, you know, they met, I believe, junior year of high school. They met junior of high school and had me the year after high school. And, it was chaos. You know, my dad was always in and out of jail. My dad's been in prison the majority of my life. Growing up, you know, you wasn't uncommon to go visit my dad. And, you know, the only time I see my dad is behind a fucking plate glass, you know.
Yeah.
That was just always the reality. Like growing up, I just expected to go to prison. Like I didn't think, like, I was just like what you did as a man. Like sometimes you went to prison. Like that was I remember growing up and just like that was an expectation, you know?
Yeah. Go ahead. You're just describing your mom.
My mom was a, you know, a single mom. She had two kids with my dad. My dad was never around, you know, or I should say rarely around.
Right.
Sometimes my mom and dad would try to work it out and it would usually, end violently, you know, for lack of a better way to put it. You know, it was a lot of chaos and it was a lot of violence, man. Honestly, it was a lot of domestic violence, you know?
Yeah. I don't want to, you know,
I don't mind talking about it. It's just, okay. It's just one of the, it doesn't bother me to talk about it. Sure. I'm a book, man. This is part of me.
Yeah.
Has it been
something that you, have gotten so used to telling that it's almost boring for you to tell it almost, or it's commonplace because you've told it so many times or thought
about
it.
I've thought about it a lot, you know, but it's not boring. It's one of those things where I've tried to be more selective about the way I say things because, you know, as you get older, like this is something I've started taking into consideration. Like I'm different than I was 15 years ago. Right. So my parents are also different, you know? And mm-hmm. I think that sometimes it's hard to talk about, this. I've talked about it a lot of times where I really didn't give a shit about how I talked about it. And then I never factored in how that affected the people around me as well, because, you know, my mom
who you were talking about.
Exactly. You know, like my mom is still young for a mom. My mom's only 50 years old.
Right.
But she's a completely different person than she was at 30. And she's a way different person than she was at 19. Right. So it's like, I've tried to pick and choose my words better now, the way I talk. Cause I used to just talk about it however, cause I don't give a shit. I still don't give a shit. It's my story. I feel like I can talk about it however I want, but as I've gotten older, I've tried to be more, empathetic to the people who might be listening and who I'm talking about. But, you know, that's just what it is. There was a lot of violence, you know, there was violence, you know, I dealt with a lot. My mom dealt with a lot. There was just a lot of domestic violence in the house. Yeah. And my mom and I never really got along. Like she loved the shit out of me, but we didn't really like, and it sounds weird, but we didn't really like each other. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like for a long time, as I got to that age where, you know, I think it's really hard for a single mom to discipline a man. Like a boy is one thing, but you get that age where you're like 11, 12, by 13, you're like, yo, I'm big enough to just get up and leave, you know? So mm-hmm. by 13, I was gone. Like by 13, 14, I was out. Like that's the age, like 12, 13, where I started going out and doing shit. And then by 14, it was just no supervision. It was like by 14, my friends and I were like piling in the car and going to a buddy's house who was 15 or 16, had his own house to party. And his mom had basically just left him, not left him, but had moved into a house. We basically had no,
you had a similar crowd. Like you found the other kids that were in your situation and you guys were like, we're on our own here.
Yeah. We did whatever we wanted. We piled 9 people in a car. We were 14 years old.
No license.
No license. We're literally children, 13, eighth grade, ninth grade, you're eighth, ninth grade. So we're talking 13, 14 years old. This is like a common Friday. I get in a big fight with my mom. I have my friends come pick me up who are also eighth or ninth graders, pick me up in their car. They bought for a couple $100. We pile 9 other kids who are under 16 in the car, drive around, figure out a way to score some alcohol and some weed, and then go to my buddy's house and party. Like we were partying. We were partying the way kids do in college when we were 14 years old, you know, like that's just what you did. And I would stay gone for most of the weekend. And then, you know, my mom would come pick me up on Sunday or something, or I get dropped off on Sunday and you start the school week or whatever, you know, or help out around the house, whatever. And, you know, and then by like 15 or 16, my mom had my little sister, my baby sister, the youngest sister, you know, no dad around. So I was 15 basically, you know, my mom had to work, to provide. And she worked her ass off. My mom worked her ass off our whole life, you know, constant overtime, constantly multiple jobs. But there was a newborn in the house, you know? Yeah. And so at 15, I was like, I'd have days where I had 10 hour days with the infant, like feet, you know, giving her bottles, changing her diapers,
yeah,
and all that. And so for me, it was like, that was really the point with my little sister. That was the point where, you know, I kind of started leveraging that, you know, it's kind of shitty to say now, but as a kid, that's what you do, whatever you do to go, what you want to do. So I basically got to the point where at 15, I was just telling my mom, look, like, if I'm going to help you with your kid, with my little sister, if I'm going to help you for, if I'm going to watch the baby for 10 hours, like when you get home from work, I'm going to go do whatever I want. Like, yeah, I'm not going to sit here and do homework and like be a kid. Like, I just had the responsibility of a newborn for your whole 10 hour shift.
Yeah.
I'm going to go party. Like, I'm going to party. So yeah, by 15, 16, there was just, I was, you know, mostly doing whatever I wanted. You know, we were getting in fights every weekend. It wasn't uncommon for us to party Friday, Saturday, Sunday and get in a fight every night. Which is what you did. We were all kids from bigger cities who got moved to, or like I was from Seattle, the Seattle right, area. My yeah, friends were mostly from the Bay Area. We all got moved. Yeah, Seattle, Washington. My friends, we're all from the Bay Area, and we'd all got moved to this little town outside of Sacramento, you know, kind of by chance, all in different situations. And we all kind of banded together. And those are still my friends today. I've had the same best friend since I was 13 years old. But yeah, it was crazy. You know, we start telling stories and shit. Like, it gets crazy. You know, you're around a bunch of people. You're around drugs. You're around, you know, everything so young. And thankfully, most of us, because we were exposed to that so young at this age now, we're like, good, you're done with it. You get out of your system early. But definitely lost some friends, man. Had a lot of friends that kind of fell off along the way, drug addicts and shit, and you know, heroin, you know, the opiate shit is so crazy now, you mm-hmm. know. Had friends overdose, and yeah, it's a lot. I would say from like 13 to like when I got arrested at 19, I was just running a fucking muck. Like, I was just being a wild animal.
Yeah.
And then by 20, I got arrested, and then I started training at Team Alpha Male, and that took me maybe a year to really switch over. And by 21, I was like,
had purpose.
Right, 100%. But there was like a few years there where it was just chaos for sure.
So when you're that age, and we'll finish up on this. I do want to get to, you know, you're here. Oh. But when you're that age and you're coming of age and you're kind of acknowledging that your situation is different, right? Like, do you remember feeling that? And what was that like to understand how different you were?
Like, as far as like how different my situation was,
you know,
growing up.
You go to school, and I'm sure you're in some school where, you know, some kid have both parents and new school shoes every six months and all that. Sure. You don't have that.
So, that's the thing is the one thing I will say is my mom always worked her ass off. We always had nice clothes. That was like super important to her.
Yeah.
So she killed it on it. So we always dressed well because my mom worked her ass off, and that was important to her. But yeah, definitely I would go to school. Like, I remember going to school with my friends, going back to school on a Monday with my friends, and like hearing what other kids were doing over the weekend. And we're like, dude, yeah, we fucking ran from the cops. Like, we rode to this party, and then we're like, you know, freshmen, sophomores in high school. We drove this party, and then my friend got blacked out drunk, and he was the only one who knows how to drive a stick. So then I had to learn how to drive a stick to get us back home. And he was like fast out in the back seat trying to coach us through it. And then, you know, we went to grab some food, and we got in a fight in the parking lot with some grown men. And then we had to run from the car. Like, those are the stories I was telling. And then we'd hear the stories the other kids were telling. And we're like, yeah, you know, I had some buddies over and we shot some hoops and watched a movie. And you're like, you know, I went to school with, there was two distinct types of people up there, up in the hill, man. There's two distinct types. There's kids whose families moved there because they wanted to get away from the city and had the money to buy land and all this shit. And then there's kids whose families, like, some generational curse shit, like, never are going to leave that area. Like, never haven't left in generations and will never leave. Like, I went to school with kids whose parents took ski trips in Europe. And I went to school with kids whose parents would just go on a bender for 2 weeks and get up and leave the kids and just fucking smoke meth for fucking a week and a half and go crazy and drive away and go somewhere. And the kids would just be left on their own to fend for themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. So I there was very two extreme, you know, there's two real extremes in the little town I went to high school in. And you hear that when you hear people talk about it. You could interview someone else that went to high school there and they'd have a completely different, they're like, oh yeah, it was a great quiet little town. It was awesome. I grew up, I had typical, you know, but there was a bunch of other kids that like, you know, I had friends who their parents would lose it and just go off for a couple of weeks on a bender. And like what they ate for like their groceries were like what they caught in the river, you know, like some straight Huckleberry Finn shit. Like wow. They're catching their food and shit. Like yeah. I went to school with some kids who were like dirt poor. And I also went to school with kids whose, you know, like I said, parents would fucking take ski trips in Europe. So that, you know, so that was cool.
Yeah. So as you're older now, you understand like, okay, I'm not catching fish in the river to eat.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly. So, like my dad wasn't around, but my mom wasn't around much either, but it's cause she was working for us to have mm-hmm. a place. She was never on drugs. She was never off. Like you get older and you get a bigger perspective. Cause you're like, yo, my situation wasn't perfect, but some kids had it way worse. You know, some kids have had it way worse than me and done a lot more.
Yeah. What's your relationship with your mom right now?
It's good. You know,
she lives in Sacramento.
Yeah. She lives like 7 minutes from me.
There you go. Yeah. So everybody's out on, most are out on the other side now in terms of your closest people.
Yeah. For sure. My mom is like, she, you know, she's always been a super hard worker, but you know, she works at a school district now. Mm-hmm. working with at-risk kids, and she's fucking great at it. All the kids at her high school love her. She's been through her own stuff too. So she has a lot of real world experience to help kids. And I think she's kind of found her calling. My mom works with kids and, does a really good job with that. My dad's out of prison. You know, we talk more than we ever have, you know, we're kind of, you know, have a mutual understanding both as grown men now, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird because I see him now taking pictures with my little sisters and my other half siblings that still live in Seattle. And he's like, they have kids now. So he's a grandpa and he's like going on camping trips as a grandpa and shit. I'm like, who the fuck is this guy? My dad, my entire life was this big, tough, scary felon, you know, like he was the toughest, coolest dude I ever met. Everyone in the area knew him. He was just like the fucking man. And now he's like this big dude with grandkids on his arms and shit, you know? And it's like, it's cool to see. It's cool to see people's growth. And, you know, I still have differences with, you know, still have differences, still have like shit to work through, but I'm pretty proud of everybody around me, even my friends. You know, a lot of my friends have battled through shit. I have friends who have battled through more in their 25 to 30 years of life than most people do in 50 or 60 years, you know, and I'm proud of everybody. Really. It's cool to see.
Yeah. What changed for you? You mentioned up until you're 19 ish, right. And you started to get into martial arts. What was the change?
Well, I was already training. I started wrestling at like 11 and I knew I wanted to be a fighter by 13 or 14. I just didn't care. I was still getting in street fights and being a fucker, you know? What changed was...
The street fights have to be their own form of training.
For sure. 100%. You know,
I mean, in terms of... I talked to Forrest Griffin and he'd say, I learned that once I was in a fight, I had no problem with the fight. The anticipation was the worst and whatever. But if you're going to be a pro fighter and that's what you want to be, I'm not saying to go out and get in street fights. There's better ways to do it. But at the same time, like...
I love confrontation and you find that out when you fight. I love to fist fight. I love confrontation and most dudes hate it. Most adult men fucking hate confrontation. It's like,
What do you love about it?
I love it. It's freedom. It's like complete pure. When the stakes are that high, it's like, there's a few things that you do, you know, there's a few things you do where you're in that flow state where it's like the stakes are so high that you're thinking about everything and you're thinking about nothing at the same time. You're completely locked in. Whatever you're doing is everything that you are. Sometimes like it happens when you fight, when you're doing it right, you're in that flow state. Sometimes riding motorcycles, you get sketchy. You get in a situation where you got to be on your fucking P's and Q's and doing fighting motorcycles. A couple things will get you to that place where you're like, yo, there's real repercussions if you fuck up. So don't fuck up, like get in that, like you're in that place where it's like, it's just like the eye of the storm. It's like peace in the chaos, man. And I just have always been attracted to that. I've always loved fist fighting. And, right. and I, even as a kid, that was part of it. You know, I fucking loved, there was like the, my favorite thing, man. I really didn't drink or smoke much. Like I really didn't, I partied a lot, but I was never like super into like getting totally fucked up. My favorite part about partying when I was young was that like meeting some chicks and getting in a fist fight. Like I love, like it was the same thing every night. It was like, you go party, you get in a fight, the dudes you beat up leave, and then you get to be the heroes for the rest of the night. Or if the dude you beat up own the house, you leave with the girls and go get food and tell stories. And like, there's just a feeling of like, no one loves you the way they love you after you win a fight, man. Strangers will hug you. Everyone will, you're the fucking man. And it was the best feeling, man. I wanted that love. I wanted that adoration of like, when you win a fight, everyone in the room is like, all right, that guy's the man for the next 15 minutes. Like some people go their whole life and never get to be the man. When you win a fight, you're the coolest motherfucker in the world for 15 minutes and everybody loves you. And that's, I think that's what I wanted as a kid. And still today, really. I mean, if we're being honest, like I want to be adored, man. I want to win fist fights and have everybody know like I'm the baddest motherfucker alive. I'm the best fighter in the world. I want people to know when I walk in a room that like, oh, that's the baddest motherfucker. And that never goes away.
Have you ever thought that you were craving that love from people around you because you weren't getting it from your dad and your mom?
100%. 100%. That's why, for sure. Yeah. 100%. That's why. Yeah. I didn't have a lot of that. Like, you know, my dad wasn't around.
And you didn't have the family love at home. So you found it elsewhere. And that's the way that you found it.
Yeah, for sure. That's one of the, I've told people that a lot of times. That's why I was so drawn to fighting, for sure. Cause I wanted motherfuckers to love me. Like I wanted people to like, oh, that dude, like I wanted to be that dude. And, my dad wasn't around. And when he, you know, everything I knew about my dad at that point was just that he was a tough dude who had fought and was respected and known for being a bad motherfucker. So in my head, that's what you did as a man. Like, that's what you did. Like you let people know. And then, you know, my mom worked her ass off and loved us and did the best that she could, but she wasn't an especially like warm, loving, nurturing mother type.
Right. You know? Like you said, like the relationship didn't click as much.
And well, to be honest, I don't think you can be like as an adult. Like, I mean, we all know, you know, we've all been there. Like it's hard to be a good version of yourself when you're fucking trying to survive.
Yeah. And like when you're in your 20s trying to figure out parenthood, you know, believe me. I mean, I can only imagine, you know.
Yeah. All this shit about like, it's easy for you and me and other people like to be like, you know, you'd be the best version of yourself. It's like, yo, that all comes from abundance. Like once you have enough food to eat and you're not worried about being homeless the next time rent comes and all the other things that come with that, then you can go like, yeah, fucking namaste. I'm going to be the best version of myself. I'm going to get a run in and I'm going to practice kindness. It's like, yo, that shit goes out the window in human nature when you're just trying to survive. Like there's no room for that shit. So I don't blame anybody really.
Yeah.
But I just didn't get that. I didn't get that. And so I found it other places and I realized like, oh shit. Like when I win fights, everybody loves me. So I'm going to win fights. Yeah. And that's for sure where it comes from. Yeah.
There you have it, folks. Hope you enjoyed that part one with Andre Feely. Part two coming at you next week. We're going to dive into his UFC career to this point, what made him change and kind of get on the straight and narrow to give him the career that he's had to this point, what loss that he thinks about the most in his career, and also how he trains his mind to continue getting better, higher peaks and higher valleys, and to not let it run amok and run wild with thoughts that are negative or would bring him to a bad place, but to keep him climbing in the UFC and mixed martial arts and in life in general. That'll be next week on Fitz Nation. Until then, would appreciate if you subscribe to the podcast, if you leave a rating and review, love that. And also you can follow me on social media anywhere at Brendan Fitz TV. You can also check out the show's YouTube channel. Just search my name on YouTube, Brendan Fitzgerald. Got some behind the scenes stuff there. Going to start branching out on YouTube a little bit more as well with different clips and things like that. But happy you listened to this one. Thanks for listening. As always, take care of yourselves. Talk to you next time on Fitz Nation.